Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, May 20th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Interior Department says using federal reclamation water for cannabis production won't be allowed. Washington State auditors do not issue statement on Whitman County's finances, and Moscow City Council votes to join police accreditation group and enacts two zoning code changes. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals this afternoon granted Governor Butch Otter's motion for a stay of U.S. Magistrate Candy Dale's ruling last week that the state's ban on same-sex marriages violates the federal constitution. The court says they will consider Idaho's appeal the week of September 8th. After the May 13th ruling by Magistrate Dale, Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin and Otter immediately filed a request for an emergency stay, heading off gay weddings in Idaho that were due to start Friday morning at 9 a.m. when Dale's ruling was due to take effect. The emergency stay was granted last Thursday, and today's action will keep the stay in effect until the appeals court can hear the case. Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin released a statement today saying, "I am pleased with the court's decision to issue a stay while it takes the time to hear our defense of Idaho's Constitution. I think it's critical to take an orderly approach to this case and avoid the confusion that has occurred in other states. Now I can focus fully on my responsibility and obligation of defending the choice Idaho voters made to define marriage 8 years ago." The decision on the motion for a stay comes one day after a federal judge in Oregon made a similar decision on an amendment to the Oregon state constitution banning same-sex marriage. The judge ruled the ban violated the U.S. Constitution, and the Oregon Attorney General has indicated she will not appeal. Same-sex weddings started in Oregon yesterday afternoon. Two Missoula-based environmental groups have filed an appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court on an April 25th ruling by U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen that said the federal government is under no obligation to protect whitebark pine trees, whose nuts are a critical food source for threatened grizzly bears. The Wild West Institute and Alliance for the Wild Rockies want the high-elevation trees protected. Whitebark pine are native to Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, California, Oregon, Washington, and Western Canada. The U.S. Interior Department announced today federal irrigation water cannot be used to grow cannabis in Washington or Colorado. However, it's unclear whether the Justice Department will prosecute growers who use water from federal dams to irrigate pot crops when the department said last year it won't prosecute cannabis operations that are legal under state law unless they meet one of eight criteria. However, a statement issued today by the Justice Department says the Department of Justice will continue to enforce the Controlled Substances Act and will focus federal resources on the most significant threats to our communities. The agency was responding to reporters' questions about the Interior Department announcement. The Interior Department's Bureau of Reclamation, which runs the federal dams, says it will only refer those they know of growing cannabis to the Justice Department. Bureau of Reclamation spokesperson Dan Dubray told the Associated Press, "We're not an investigative agency. We're an agency that provides water to irrigation districts. The limit of our proactive stance is that if asked, we're not approving it, and if we become aware of it, we report it." Today's announcement is likely only to apply in Washington for the foreseeable future because Colorado does not allow outdoor cannabis cultivation and all 980 licensed growers there use municipal water on their crops. a licensed cannabis grower in Eastern Washington, told the Associated Press she does not want her name published for fear of having her federal water shut off. She said outdoor growers have other irrigation options, such as sinking their own well, but that could be an expensive startup cost she and her partners did not plan for. After failing to come up with a set of zoning rules to include cannabis-related businesses during a six-month moratorium on licensing those businesses, the Clarkston Planning Commission voted 2-1 yesterday to recommend the city extend the moratorium for another 6 months. Prior to the vote, Commission member John Murray moved the commission adopt the zoning strategy presented at an April public hearing, but the motion did not receive a second. Murray voted against extending the moratorium, and Commissioners Bob Gilbertson and Jim Merrill voted to extend it. In a memo to the Planning Commission, Clarkston Public Works Director Jim Martin suggested establishing a new zoning category called Neighborhood Commercial, which could be used to restrict cannabis-related businesses. Murray and City Council member Brian Kolstad said they found the memo troubling because the strategy seemed designed to specifically restrict only one type of business. The Planning Commission plans to continue discussion on the new zoning category. If the council approves the additional six-month moratorium, it can be lifted, if necessary, if zoning regulations are in place sooner. After a lengthy discussion that included input from the public, Lewiston City Council members decided in a work session yesterday afternoon to set up a subcommittee to examine the possibility of changing the wording of a proposed anti-discrimination ordinance that would give protection to gay, lesbian, and transgendered people in the city. The committee includes City Council member Jesse Maldonado, who drafted the ordinance, as well as council members Bob Blakey and Jed Randall. One question raised in the session was whether discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity should be a misdemeanor or should be solely a civil matter. People who spoke in favor of the ordinance described instances of discrimination that included being fired from jobs and harassed. Councilmember Michael Collins, who is also the Lewis Clark State College track and field coach, said his biggest impediment to recruitment for the track and field team is Idaho's reputation as a white supremacist and homophobic state. Mayor Pro Tem Ryan R.J. Johnson called the ordinance too punitive and recommended instead the council pass a proclamation saying discrimination on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation is bad for business. After a meeting with Whitman County financial officials yesterday, Washington State auditors declined to issue an opinion regarding the accuracy of the county's 2012 financial statements. According to the auditor's report, the county failed to explain why significant accounting adjustments were made and noted large discrepancies between bank statements and accounting records. This is the ninth year state auditors have found fault with Whitman County's accounting and finances. The report acknowledged some concerns have been addressed during that time. Whitman County Auditor Eunice Coker told the Lewiston Tribune she planned to forward the auditor's report to Standard & Poor's, but said it was doubtful the suspension of the county's credit rating by Standard & Poor's will be lifted before the 2013 audit is complete. Coker, who has been county auditor for only the past few years, said she did not have complete access and control of the county's accounting software until last January. She has asked county commissioners to hire an additional finance person, and commissioners agree additional staffing is needed. However, the commissioners have refused to pay for either consulting or a new employee until Coker provides them with a long-range strategic plan showing how money they might spend will truly fix the problems. Coker said she anticipates a much better result from the 2013 audit, noting errors and procedures that caused discrepancies in 2012 were altered in 2013. The state audit did confirm the county was in compliance with federal grant programs, and there was no evidence of fraud or wrongdoing behind the discrepancies. Some local workers at the site of Washington's Oso landslide in the Cascades have walked off a project to clear a section of State Route 530, citing safety concerns and a need to work more slowly to search for human remains and property. The Daily Herald of Everett reported several workers walked away Sunday and more workers left yesterday. Washington Transportation Department spokesperson Travis Phelps said all safety complaints are addressed immediately and inspectors found the job site to be safe. Phelps also said no accidents or injuries have occurred since the highway cleanup started. Workers complained they were working in uncertain footing, in violent weather, and sometimes in mud up to their waists. Rhonda Cook, a spotter who scans material as it is poured into trucks to be hauled off, told the Daily Herald spotters feel they can't meet their responsibility to the affected families. Cook said, "We just all get a feeling we are being paid to do a job we just can't do." A California man was taken to Grittman Medical Center after police chased him. The police chase happened after the man's vehicle ran off the east end of 3rd Street and plunged into Paradise Creek. The incident began around 5:30 p.m. yesterday when Malcolm Megerson left his vehicle in the intersection of State Route 270 and Airport Road, then returned to the vehicle and drove away with police in pursuit. Megerson was charged with felony eluding police. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow. The Moscow City Council last night voted to accept a $10,000 accreditation fee waiver from the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies and to authorize Moscow Police Chief David Duke to sign commission accreditation access agreements and begin the commission's accreditation process. Although the Accreditation Commission is waiving $10,000 in fees, the city would pay $5,500 for on-site assessments over a three-year period and would have to pay for a software subscription costing $3,215 per year. Moscow Police Chief David Duke explained the process before last night's vote.
The Commission on Accreditation of Law Enforcement Agency, we call it CALEA, is an independent nonprofit corporation established back in 1979 to assess and accredit law enforcement agencies throughout the United States. Through their programs, the police agency establishes a uniform set of best practices that are consistent on an international scale, they are measurable, and they create accountability to the community, policymakers, and the line officers who are performing the day-to-day work. Within the law enforcement standards of these best practices are compliance requirements dealing with life, health, safety, and high liability exposures. I get a question many times of why do we want to become a CLIA accredited agency?
That was Moscow Police Chief David Duke. Duke said aligning with the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies would mean the city police force would pay lower insurance costs and that commission management procedures allow the city police to defend themselves better against lawsuits. City Councilmember Art Bedke said he favored adopting the accreditation program.
I kind of like the program just from the point of view of providing structure to the department to allow for better management, which means better efficiency and reflecting the precepts of community policing, which we have here, really could reinforce the ability of the department to interface well with the community. And then with the periodic oversight, nothing against the current oversight within the department, but having somebody else check you out from time to time is not a bad thing, just to make sure that you're not missing something along the way.
That was Moscow City Councilmember Art Bedke. Before the vote, City Councilmember Dan Karskalin asked Police Chief David Duke about ongoing costs for the program.
We got the, first 4 years of what this will run. So after the, it's a three-year process as far as renewal. So is this basically repeat these costs? I'm looking at the back page of the packet here. does it basically repeat these costs every 3 years, or how's that work?
After the assessment that we do, and then we are audited. If we do get accreditation, then we have a 3-year period. A membership fee upon that accreditation is a little over $4,000. I think it's $4,065 annual membership. That is directed toward paying for the next audit for travel and expenses, along with membership and some software charges to subscribe.
That was Moscow Police Chief David Duke, preceded by City Councilmember Dan Karskalin. The council approved the city's alignment with the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies on a 6-0 vote. The Moscow City Council voted unanimously in favor of 2 zoning code changes last night. The council favored a proposal to allow mortuaries by right in neighborhood business, motor business, and general business zoning districts. Currently, a conditional use permit is required to open a mortuary in those zones. The proposal stems from a request by Short's Funeral Chapel to allow mortuaries by right in neighborhood business districts, which is the zone where Short's is located. City staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended allowing mortuaries in motor business and general business zones as well. Moscow Community Development Director Bill Belknap explained further at last night's Moscow City Council meeting.
The neighborhood business district currently allows a variety of uses by right. The first of which our establishment is to provide clerical, professional, and other skilled services which do not involve substantial fabrication. Examples of such uses include, but not limited to, the offices of professionals such as doctors, lawyers, accountants, counselors, architects, and engineers, consultant offices, administrators' offices, beauty and barber shops, and graphic and photographic studios. The neighborhood zoning district also allows churches, convents, monasteries, synagogues, and mosques as allowed uses within the neighborhood business district. After review, the commission felt that mortuaries and funeral homes would appear to fit within the category of both skilled services from the services that are furnished and provided, as well as similar to churches with respect to the structures, parking areas, funerals, and services, and other types of activities that occur with those uses. The Planning and Zoning Commission also took a look, and so the Commission concluded they believed that mortuary should be considered as a permitted use within the motor business, general business, and neighborhood business zoning district. As I mentioned, the inquiry was initially about the neighborhood business district, but the Commission wanted to look at the other commercial districts in the zoning code to determine where they would also be appropriately located. They concluded that in the motor business district would be appropriate. They also felt that the general business should be a permitted use by right rather than a conditional use permit as it is today, and they felt that they should be a permitted use by right within the neighborhood business zoning district.
In the second zoning code change, the council voted in favor of a plan to clarify the allowance of tandem parking for single and two-family residential uses and partially recognize the allowance of tandem parking spaces for multifamily residential developments under certain conditions. Community Development Director Bill Belknap.
So the amendments or the proposal, the draft is before you this evening, as I mentioned, would formally recognize tandem parking for single-family, two-family, twin home, and townhouse uses. I would also allow the recognition of tandem parking for multifamily uses under the following conditions. The first of which is that the purpose of the parking design is to provide enclosed garages for the multifamily dwelling residence use. That really was the driver on the approach to us to recognize the parking was they wanted to provide this amenity to the project. And they wanted to be able to place a parking stall essentially behind a garage door. So they would like to have the space in the garage bay be considered towards providing the off-street parking requirement and have a parking space in front of that garage door. There are concerns when you look at multifamily projects and tandem parking is that it does require a certain level of coordination among those within dwelling, a single dwelling unit, as well as those in other dwellings. And if you think about the off-street parking requirement for multifamily use, we have a variety of standards, whether it's a single bedroom apartment, it's 1.25 parking spaces per unit. If it's a two-bedroom park, it's 1.75, and it's three or more, it's 0.75 stalls per bedroom. But all of that parking is combined into a centralized parking facility that essentially everybody then can utilize. And so you may have instances where one dwelling unit has fewer vehicles than another and allows that to balance out. Or there's usually excess parking spaces available for guests and visitors that are coming to the site that maybe don't reside on site. When you get into a tandem configuration, you are dependent upon the coordination of vehicles to have access to those parking spaces. So there were concerns that we would be reducing the effective amount of parking that would be available. The other condition that's in the draft ordinance is that the tandem parking space, that being the parking space within the garage and the parking space in front of the garage bay, are required to be assigned and furnished for use by the occupants of a single dwelling unit without separate additional compensation. That separate additional compensation is something that we've had some experience recently where part of the required parking was provided in enclosed garages, but it was being offered for additional rent. In that type of situation, if the occupants or the residents on the project aren't interested in paying that additional rent, it is essentially taking that parking stall that's required by the zoning code out of the available parking to meet their legal obligations underneath the zoning code. It's certainly fine to provide it, and the rent can certainly reflect the benefit of having that garage space, but we don't want to have it as a separate compensation. Otherwise, that parking can be removed from the inventory.
That was Moscow Community Development Director Bill Belknap speaking to the Moscow City Council last night. Votes on both zoning code changes occurred after public hearings in which no citizens opted to comment. Polls will be open for the Idaho primary election until 8 p.m. tonight in Moscow. Those who live east of Main Street vote at the Latah County Fairgrounds Exhibit Building across White Avenue from Safeway, and those who live west of Main Street vote on the southwest concourse of the ASUI Kibbe Dome on the University of Idaho campus. Other Latah County polling places are Deary City Hall, Genesee Senior Center, Kendrick Fire Hall, Harvard Community Center, Julietta City Hall Annex, Scenic Six Park Building in Potlatch, International Order of Odd Fellows Hall in Potlatch, Palouse River Community Center in Princeton, Troy Lions Club Community Center in Troy, Shop Residence of James H. Hagedorn in Viola, Mountain Home Grange in Potlatch, and Beauville Family Support Center in Beauville. Under Idaho's system, in which parties can close their primaries, those getting a Republican ballot must declare themselves Republicans, and that declaration will be made part of the public record. The Democratic primary is open to all voters. Voters are only allowed a primary ballot for one party. There is also a nonpartisan race for State Supreme Court Justice between incumbent Justice Joel Horton and challenger William Breck Seiniger, and a second district judge race between incumbent Jeff Brody and challenger John Bradbury. Nonpartisan ballots will also include school district levies in the Troy and White Pine school districts in Latah County. In Idaho, voters do not have to be registered to show up at the polls and vote because they can register at the polling place. They must bring an ID plus proof they've lived at their current address for at least 30 days. Idaho is a photo ID voter state, although voters who don't have a picture ID can sign an affidavit saying they are who they say they are at the polling place instead of presenting a picture ID. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, it will be mostly clear tonight and tomorrow. Low 44, high 73. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 46. Tomorrow night, mostly sunny, high 75. Thursday, mostly cloudy, 51. Thursday night, and a 30% chance of showers in the afternoon. Friday, otherwise mostly cloudy, high 74. Currently, fair skies, 70 degrees in Moscow. Coming up, the sustainability segment, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And then the Tuesday night grab bag with Dave Weaver is coming up at 7:30. Music and entertainment throughout the night here at KRFP. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robertus. Nancy Casey sits with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 FM.